Hello and welcome to the Martial Arts Teaching Tactics Podcast. I'm Chris Bean and I'm joined by Chris Kent. Mr. Kent?
Hello, sir.
Today we're going to talk about the learning cycle and some different tools or tactics that we can use to help to speed up that learning cycle for our students. The learning cycle is the way in which we all learn things. Today we're going to divide that learning cycle into five different stages. Stage number one is information intake. Stage number two is guided practice. Stage number three is self-practice. Stage number four is situational-based practice. And stage number five is touch-up. So this learning cycle all starts with information intake. This is where our job as instructors comes in. The way we break down the information, the way we demonstrate the information, and even the words or phrases we use are so important to starting this process correctly. If we cannot get the students' attention, or we don't use the words or phrases they can understand or connect with, then the information will be lost. We will be fighting a losing battle from the beginning. The next stage in the learning cycle is guided practice. This is allowing the students to actually perform the moves while you are there giving them feedback on how they're doing. Providing that initial feedback is vital for your students to succeed in learning the movement. If we do not provide that initial feedback, the students may be practicing incorrectly. And if that's the case, they will need to relearn the movement correctly, overriding the incorrect information in their brain. When a new movement is learned incorrectly, this can be a tough road to correct later on. And this is where almost all bad habits stem from. After the guided practice phase, then we move into self-practice. In this self-practice stage, your students will get the necessary repetitions on the movement to begin to commit them to memory. It is in this phase you may need to give minimal guidance to your students to help to continue to practice those moves correctly. Situational-based practice. In this phase, you want to mimic a situation that your students will need to recall that information or those moves. I believe this is a key part of the learning stage process. Performing a move in a vacuum, that is a situation that there is no stress or fatigue placed on the student, will give them a false sense of security. Performing movements in the class is very different than the atmosphere of the test. And the test is vastly different than what it would be like to actually defend yourself on the street using these moves. So setting up a situation that is as close as you can to mimic that of the test or to the street self-defense or to any situation in which the students will need to recall the information will be an important part to this learning cycle.
I think most of our training is what we would call situational-based practice in the sense that we do everything a very specific way in a very specific scenario. And sometimes I don't think that dawns on people or they don't make that connection very early on until later. You know, we have these moves and we prescribe them a certain way and we say, do this many elbow strikes and this many knee strikes or grab this part of the body and blah, 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 whatever. And it's very easy to get it in your head that that is how it's going to happen and that's how it's going to be all the time when I don't think that's true. We have no idea what's going to happen, you know? And so we prescribe these moves and certain ways to do these moves, but it doesn't mean that's the only way or it doesn't mean that's how it has to be done because we literally have no idea. We literally have no idea what's going to happen and what it's going to be like. So setting up these situational-based practices can be good to help them understand what's going to, you know, what you expect from them and what you want them to do. But then, like you said, taking it out of that vacuum of a very particular, very specific way and putting it into a more chaotic environment where maybe there's more people or you don't know what's going to happen next or maybe you have them work out first so they're sweaty and I try to grab your arm and your arm slips out because we're both covered in sweat or whatnot and maybe the lights are off or your eyes are closed or maybe you're unprepared for ready for the technique or whatever it is, but having them practice that in different situations, different scenarios is only going to improve their technique and also make them more prepared if anything happens to happen outside of the studio on the street. And the reason this comes later is because we want them to have that foundation, the idea of, hey, we'd like you to do this, and we'd like you to do this, and like you to do that, like this for this to happen. And then when they're in those more chaotic, more real type simulated situations, they're able to take that foundation and adjust it as needed when they're in that situation. And so overlooking the step of situational based practice and taking it out of the very specific, simple scenario and putting it into more chaotic and more difficult scenarios, I think is a huge detriment, because the last thing you want is for, well, the last thing you want at any point in time is for anyone to get attacked, or any of your students or friends or family to be attacked. But beyond that, if they happen to be attacked and they're one of your students, you don't want them to go to do the self-defense technique and do it exactly cookie cutter like you taught it in class, and then it not work, and they're stunned into inaction because they thought, oh, well, if I hit this guy here, he's going to get knocked out, right? Well, no. Maybe. Awesome. Great if it happens, but that's not going to happen every time. It's not going to be like that. It's not going to be like our situation, our very controlled environment when we're training. So putting them in different scenarios and adding the different elements to the situation is beneficial on many levels. And I think that takes them from someone who just understands what they are supposed to do, takes them from that very base understanding to a more advanced understanding of, this is what I would like to happen, but if it doesn't happen, I can adjust and do this. Or if I'm trying to do this and something else happens, I can adjust and do this, and making them more well-rounded rather than A to B to C to D and it's over. Because it doesn't always happen that way. It could go A to C to B, back to A, then to D, and then, oh, or back at B and then back. So being able to switch things up and provide less of a structured training can be beneficial, especially in self-defense situations, but even beyond that into other situations. Because if we're doing traditional moves like hand or foot techniques or forms, they're always in the same room, always facing the same way, always following the same commands. You turn them around, have them face the back of the room, they're completely lost because they don't understand that the pattern is not relative to where they are. So even in that kind of training, don't always have them face the same way. Have them face different ways. Have them do it with different people. Have them do it fast, do it slow, do it with their eyes closed. Have them do it in all these different scenarios to make them more well-rounded, rather than just, this is the way it's always done, this is the way it has to be, and putting them in that box. Let them step out of that box eventually. Of course, as we already said, you want that to happen slowly, and the other situations come later. Help them get the correct moves, help them understand everything, so that when they get to those other situations, it's a lot easier for them to apply the moves and do the moves outside of that. But that's why this step comes later in the learning process, because we want them to know everything before we try to switch it up and throw the curveballs at them. But it still needs to happen so that they know their techniques in and out and forward and backward.
Yeah, and you know, you talked about facing different walls and different directions. If you really want to throw a curveball and have them do the moves facing the corner of the room, because then what that does is that throws the reference point of having a solid, flat object on their left, right, front, or back, and it points them to a point, really throws people off. So that's a good kind of test or check to see how well your students actually know that information, if they can do it towards the corner of the room. And if for whatever reason your school is set up in that way, then turn it to so where they're facing the walls, because that'll be a different point of reference for them. Now, with this doesn't just apply to self-defense type situations, although that is extremely important. For your testing, if you are in your classes and you're very laxed or laid back in what you require, how you interact with the students, or what you let the students get by with, and then you go to your testings and you're extremely strict and you need or want to see a high performance from your students, that simply won't happen, because they're not geared. They haven't been working on those things. They haven't been doing those in that manner. So however you plan to test your students, you need to set the class up so it follows that same structure, so your students know what to expect when they get to that test. Because if you're two vastly different people, you know, in class, you're laid back and, you know, slow and controlled and you know, you let the students play and have a good time, and then you go to testing and you know, it's really militaristic and yes, sir, and no, sir, and you want them to do real, it's not going to happen. So remember that the way that you lead class, the things that you let slide by, the things that you allow in class, your students are going to see that and recognize that, and then you are going to have to allow those things on tests or wherever the other situations may be. So just be careful as you do that. Of course, you have to walk the line. Maybe in the beginning of the testing cycle, you are more laid back. Because the students are, you know, right now they're learning those movements. They're going through the first couple stages of this process. And then as you get closer to that testing time, you need to pull the reins in a little bit and have them tighten up and be more disciplined and controlled and intense with their moves so that when it comes time for the belt test, they can be that for your belt test.
I'm pretty sure we've talked before about having those high standards for your students and holding them to those high standards. And something that came into my mind as you were talking just now is the idea of you want to inspect what you expect. So during the class, if you want them to perform at that high level, you want them to be doing certain things, you need to make sure that you are checking in on those things and making sure they are doing those things and making sure they understand that you expect that from them. Because if they come to a test and they don't know what you expect or don't know what level you expect them to perform at, then of course they're going to let you down because you haven't conveyed that information. And at the end of the day, that's your fault for not letting them understand what you expect from them and setting forward or setting forth that idea of how you want them to perform. So you need to make sure that you're inspecting what you're expecting and conveying that information to them so they also know what's going on. And on top of that, make sure that they know what's going to be on their test. Make sure they know what they're going to be tested over. And then when it comes time for the test, don't try and trick them. Don't pull out something that you did in one drill from 2 months ago and expect them to know how to do it well when you hadn't told them that they needed to do it. So it may feel like the appropriate time to try to trick them or give them a pop quiz or, you know, try to really throw them off their game, but that's the exact wrong time to do that, especially at that test. So make sure going into it, they know what they are going to be tested on and they know that material well, and then stick to that. Don't switch it around. And if you decide to throw something extra in there, you need to communicate, hey, this won't affect your test, or like this isn't a pass or fail thing. I just want to see if you can remember that one drill we did 3 weeks ago, or whatever it is, and set up those expectations for them, hold them to those, but don't try to trick them or try to set them up for failure. Stick to what you said and give them the best chance possible. I'm not saying hand them their new belt or hand them their stripe or whatever it is, but don't try to screw them over either. You know, be honorable and be respectful about how you do it, and make sure they know what's going to be tested on. That way they can have the time to practice and train and be prepared for that, because testing is hard, and for some people it's harder than others. So definitely don't want to set them up for a failure or put them in a bad position. We want to give them all the tools they need and have them be prepared, and then stick to what we were going to say and don't go off the script.
Yeah, you know, and a big part of that, especially for the first couple belts, is people have a vastly different idea of what testing looks like. And so setting up a situation in your class, maybe the class before testing or a couple classes before testing, and do like a pretest, just so that the students have an idea of what specifically they're going to be doing and how it's going to be done and the whole process. Because then, it's, again, especially for those first couple belt stages, that's important because everybody has a different idea of what testing is going to be. And you have some people that are going to be thinking, oh, this would be super easy, and it's not. Or you have the complete opposite of that. So if you can do a pretend test, a practice test, a pretest before the actual test, then that will give the students much better insight to how they are going to be expected to perform and the things that will be expected of them.
The nice thing about that is not only letting them know what's going to happen and what you expect from them, but it's a really nice way for you to check in. Because before they get to the actual test, you already have that look into how they're going to perform and how they're doing. So when you get to the test, it's not a huge disappointment to you. It's not a huge letdown when no one's performing well. You already know going into it, okay, Maybe you do it, you know, a week or two before the actual test, so you have a few extra classes to clean up those things that you noticed during that pretest, or however you want to do it. But again, not only is it helpful for them to know what's going to happen, but then you have that little check-in to see how they're performing and what you need to work on or improve before that test or after that test. You know, okay, this testing cycle, they didn't do good on this. So this next quarter, we need to keep doing what we're doing and make this part even better. That way, we don't have this problem moving forward.
So the last step in the learning cycle is often the most overlooked, and that's touch-up. In this phase, your student's able to perform the movement at a competent level, under stress, or in a variety of different situations. During this step, you may only need to perform the move two or so times just to keep it fresh. Be sure to include time in your class for your students to touch up on older material. Otherwise, you may need to reteach it altogether. And setting that time up in your class, I think, is a necessary step to this. You can't rely on your students to practice these moves outside of class, because if it's an adult, they have a full life. You know, they have a job, they may have kids, you know, you have no idea what's going on for them. They have all sorts of other things that are on top of their list, perhaps a little higher than practicing that move that you told them to practice. And then for kids, they don't have the self-discipline the majority of time to actually go home and work on these moves outside of class. And so what that means is, realistically, your students are working on these moves when they're in class with you. When they're at home, they're doing whatever else they're doing, but it's not martial arts moves. So allowing that one or two times to go through those movements just to keep them fresh, just for that touch up is, I would say, essential to do. And perhaps for your higher end students, maybe that means your class is a little longer, or you switch up the exercises for your class. And so what I mean by that, well, generally for a class, you do a warm up, then you do material, then you do a review or a cool down, and then you talk about what happened, then you end. And so in that warm up time, instead of doing push-ups and sit-ups and leg lifts and jumping jacks or whatever those exercises are, have them run through their older material. And as they're doing that, let them know, listen, we're going to do this as your warm-up today. So as you're going through these moves, I need to see you do this at a high intensity. I want to see some good stances, some loud yells, and give it all you got. Because then, as they're going through those moves, they're getting twofold practice. They're getting practice, they're getting review on those things, and they're also getting their warm-up. Because, well, I'm sure you know this, but if you do your moves and you do them for a handful of minutes, or you review all your old information, you have one heck of a good warm-up built in to your class, and you get that review on those old moves. So why not kill two birds with one stone there?
It's very similar to the idea of motivation. You know, we can't just be motivated once, and we can't just do our moves one time. We need to be constantly retouching and re-going over those things. And just think about how, not only you personally, how good of a martial artist you would be if you're always reviewing, always going over your techniques. But think about how the students would be. You know, they're in the more advanced class now, but you can't neglect the old moves. And one way I explain this to beginners, white belts especially, is that everything, it's like a tower. Everything builds on top of each other. So you have that good foundation at the beginning, and then everything else is going to add on top of that, and it's going to keep adding on and keep adding on. So when you're at the current level, whether that be the foundation or you're four levels in or you're six levels in, you need to do your best to create that level, make it solid. That way when we go to add on something else, your tower isn't going to fall over. And not only creating the solid levels, but then going back, reinforcing, and doing maintenance on the previous levels is important, because if I get to level 20, but my level 5 and level 4 and 3 start to weaken and they start to break down, again, the whole tower is going to fall down because those lower levels are weaker. So being able to go back over and practice those things, whether it's something you did last week or something you did 2 years ago, that's only going to make you a better martial artist and a better athlete and better at everything because you're constantly in touch with those things and you're constantly working on those things. The same way that we need to be motivated over and over again and to bring it outside of the studio. I think we talked about it before, the same way you take a shower or you go to the gym. You don't just do it once a week, or well, hopefully you don't take a shower once a week only, but hopefully you're bathing constantly, or if you are interested in exercise and being fit, you're doing more than one workout a week. You're actually putting a lot of time and effort into that and doing it consistently. So even in that training, old stuff and new stuff, you need to make sure that you are constantly in touch with it and constantly going over it. And that's only going to help you improve and help you keep in touch or stay in touch with those techniques and moves, especially as instructors. Being fluent or being current on that stuff is important for us.
So now that we've had an opportunity to talk about what a snapshot of the learning cycle looks like, what can we do to speed up that process? Well, one thing is making sure that you have a system to allow your students to go through each one of these phases in the cycle is a simple way to speed up the process. If you are leaving out some of these stages, then you're not going to be working on efficiently going through the learning cycle. So you're going to be at a detriment already. So again, information intake, that one will pretty well be there every time. Guided practice, remember, is when your students practice, you're there in the initial phases to give them that feedback so they're not rehearsing or practicing those moves incorrectly. You want to be there to fix those things from the beginning so that as they move to the next phase, self-practice, they can do it on their own. And in that self-practice time, you will have a few things you might have to tweak or adjust along the way, but the majority of time, they're just working on doing it. And what that does is that gives them the reps to be able to commit those moves to memory. And then from there, you move to that situational-based practice. And this can be very different depending on the moves that you're doing. It could be you are going to prioritize for testing, or you're going to prioritize for self-defense, or prioritize for whatever else that is specific to your students' needs or to your needs as the instructor. But setting up those situational-based practiced times in class is that next stage. And then from there, you move to touch-up. Touch-up is just going back and reviewing. It's as Master Kent said, the maintenance phase. You just go back and work on those things just one or two times and you move on. Just the review. So just having an idea of what the learning cycle looks like will greatly help and aid your students in learning the moves. Setting up times in your class for your students to actively recall the information, self-practice, is another way to speed up that learning cycle. So self-practice means that they are in the middle of the stage, the middle of learning this move. Self-practice is where all of the reps come in. And if you can give somebody more reps on whatever the move is, that's going to greatly benefit them to be able to recall that information. Now, as you're doing that, you will have to work into a little bit of the situational-based practice, because the majority of your students don't want to come to class and do one move 100 times and then in class and go home and then come back the next day and do the same move 100 more times and then in class and then come back and so on. Now, they'll know that move awfully well, but their brain, their focus won't be in the class. So you need to be able to switch up the drills on how you're doing the moves, because what that'll do is that will disguise the repetition. And the repetition is key. You have to have that, but you also need to disguise the repetition to help keep it interesting enough for your students to want to show up to class, to actually want to go through the drills to work on those moves. And so that's where the situational-based practice comes in a little bit as well. Setting up that situational-based practice, again, is key to making sure that your students can recall the information in various different ways. There have been studies that show that if a student is learning a specific math problem, for example, if they're asked the same type of question, but just 5% different than the way that they're normally worked on or asked that question, they see it as a different problem altogether. They're not able to connect those two things. It's a different, it's a whole different situation. So being able to put that math problem into a real world situation is often tough for people. And it's the same thing for our MOOCs. If you can't give the students a situation that they're actually going to need to be able to do that move, or the situation that is most likely going to come out on the street if they get attacked, then when and if that time happens, they're not going to be able to do the move, or they're not going to be able to do it the way that they need to do it to actually defend themselves, because they haven't done it in that situation before. This is why it is so important to set up a situation that your students will actually need to recall their information. Because without that, they may not be able to do that in their head. They might not be able to take that situation that you set up in class, that drill that you had them practice, and apply that if and when somebody actually attacks them outside of your class.
All of this, from our standpoint as instructors, again, as sitting here listening to you as you're explaining this and talking about it, a huge part of it to me just seems like planning. If you have a system, if you have an understanding of this learning cycle, and you're able to develop a plan of attack to making sure to make sure that all of these different steps, all five steps of this learning cycle are touched and taken care of, then it seems like we're setting ourselves and our students up for success. And if you're able to just take some time, think to yourself how you want things to go, develop that plan, develop that system so that everything is covered and everything is taken care of, then basically some of the hard work is done. All you have to do is go out there and push those buttons and make the plan work and follow the lesson and trust that it's going to work out and be good. So, you know, whether it be setting up the situational practice, setting up the self practice, or just understanding how you're going to, or how your information is going to come across, and planning everything out ahead of time is huge. And I can't imagine. We've run a lesson plan in a curriculum, and we've done things very specific way for a long time. I can't imagine going into anything without a plan. I might be able to you know, dive into something and make my way through it, but it's so much better to know what's going to happen and have those drills planned out and have the exercise planned out and be conscious of this learning cycle. It takes some of the thought out of it, because you just trust the process and you put it to work. And after the quarter ends, things usually tend to work out. I'm not saying that it's a no-brainer and you just do it. You have to put some effort into it, and you have to make sure that you're using all the things we talked about to lead and run a good class while you're there. But having an idea of what's going to happen before you get into it, and making sure that this learning cycle is reinforced, and you know, you come back to the certain things that you need to come back to, and you work on all five of the steps of the learning cycle, and having that planned out ahead of time, again, is going to set you up and set your students up for success. And I think is a huge part of leading good classes and having a good program in totality.
Yeah, and I got two things for that. So with that touch-up phase, that's something you can build into your curriculum, right? And so if you have the students work on XYZ moves, and then they move to the next belt cycle and they work on ABC moves, and each time they're working on different moves, then when it comes time to review those information, that older information in class, it may take a little longer, or it may not be as fresh for your students. So what you can do is set your curriculum up in a tower, to bring that back in a tower type fashion. So they learn the foundational moves, then they build on that and they learn the next moves. And each time they're going up to the top of the tower, by the time they get black belt or whatever the high level is, but they are still working on and reviewing and rehearsing and having that touch up time in class on the foundation, because it's all built on each other. You can't do the next moves without doing the first moves, and you can't do the third move without doing the first and second move. So setting up your lesson plan or your curriculum in such a way that you build on those moves is important. And you talked about program. Your your school, your lesson plan, your information, the way that you teach your students is a program. And if you have a program that is loosely defined or a program that you haven't spent much time on setting up, then it's going to fail. And so think about your information as a program, and you have to deliver that program to the students. And you have to do it in such a way that it's set up to allow your students to succeed. If you are continually changing things in your program, it's going to be difficult for your students to remember or to stay up with all of those changes that you've made. Another part of the program is once it's there, everybody is doing the same thing. And so that means that if I'm teaching the class, the students are going to perform the move this way. And if Master Kent's teaching a class, the students are going to perform the moves the same way because we're all doing the same program. But if you are having your students perform moves differently if you're teaching the class versus somebody else teaching the class, then that means that you have something you need to fix. You're not on the same page. And in order to run your program efficiently, everybody needs to be on the same page. That is your program. Everybody does the same thing. It doesn't matter who's teaching because you just follow the program. You do what the program says. And so going through your program and allowing time to facilitate the learning cycle or the stages of learning or the learning styles, all of those things are, I believe, very important to delivering your information in such a way that your students can remember and recall that information when they need it, not just on tests, but even if they get grabbed in a self-defense type situation on the street, they can recall that information to defend themselves. And so setting up your program is so important, not only just for your students to learn the information, it's so important for your team to be all on the same page, teaching the same information, providing the same type of feedback, and having the students perform it the same way. It doesn't matter who's teaching the class. Everybody's doing the same program. And so thinking about your school, your information, and put it into that program type mindset and see how well that will improve your school.
Yes, sir. Just to recap the 5 stages of the learning cycle. Step 1, information intake. Step 2, guided practice. Step 3, self-practice. Step 4, situational-based practice. And step 5, touch-up.
I think we have covered lots of different ways to go through those stages and even some different tools and tactics that we can use to help to facilitate those in our class or to allow our students to go through each one of those. And again, if you haven't thought about your information in this type of fashion before, that could be the step that you need, right? Just being able to hear this. Okay, well, in order for my students to learn something, they have to first get the information. Okay, then they have to go through guided practice where I give them feedback on how to perform these moves initially so that they're not practicing incorrectly in any way. Then give them time to go practice it. And then from there, you set up different situations so that they can perform these moves in a varied of different atmospheres and ways. And then you have touch-up where they just have that maintenance time to go back and rehearse those moves 1 or 2 times and they move on. And so just thinking about your moves in that way, thinking about the way you share your information and the way your class is structured and allowing it to, or perhaps adjusting it to fit within this learning cycle, I think will be a huge benefit for your students. If you have anything to add to the learning cycle, or you think we missed anything, or you want to reach out and talk to us in some way, shape, or form, how can they do that?
Yes, sir. We're on the socials, Facebook, Twitter, Reddit, YouTube, Instagram, all those places. You can find us at MA Teaching Tactics. MA for martial arts teaching tactics. Again, that is MA teaching tactics.
Until next time, I'm Chris Bean.
I'm Chris Kent.